Welcome to Induction Vault, a production of iHeartRadio and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Hey, Brooklyn. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony is about to begin. It's time to take your seats. You too, Cleveland.
Each year, rock's highest honor, induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, is bestowed upon a handful of artists, cementing their legacy for eternity. That night, they are celebrated by their peers and the contemporary artists they've influenced. All share a mutual admiration for these legends who have dedicated their lives to rock and roll. This was on full display when Harry Styles inducted Stevie Nicks. Styles' own force in music is strong, and here he stands before us as a fan, sharing the same sentiment as so many. How Stevie can compel you to feel so many emotions all at once through her words, her voice, and her true self. Feel their connection and chemistry as Stevie steps forward to show her gratitude and acknowledge what it means to be the first woman inducted into the Hall of Fame twice. Hear Stevie's honest, unabashed story about how she saw exactly what she wanted for herself, went for it, and captivated us all.
And now, to induct Stevie into the Hall of Fame, Harry Styles. Just stop your crying, it's a sign of the times.
We gotta get away from here. Hello. Just like the white-winged dove sings a song, it sounds like she's singing. Stevie Nicks is the first female artist to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for a second time. The first female artist to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for a second time. First with Fleetwood Mac, and now for her unforgettable solo work. With Stevie, you're not celebrating music from long ago through the mists of time. She was standing on stage, headlining a place this size, doing her best work just 3 nights ago. She is forever current. She is forever Stevie. But what exactly does that mean? In my family, we listened at home, we listened in the car, we listened wherever we could. Dreams was the first song that I knew all the words to before I really knew what the words meant. I thought it was a song about the weather, but I knew that it was a beautiful song about the weather. I always knew the words, and I loved them all. Thunder only happens when it's raining. Players only love you when they're playing. She's so wise and serene. She sees all the romance and drama in the world, and she celebrates it. She will stand on stage introducing her songs, telling you how she wrote them, honestly, like you're the only other person in the world. You're more than a fan. You are her friend. And her words say in so many ways, I understand you, and you are not alone. And that is true Stevie. She walked a path tread by Janis Joplin and Joni Mitchell, visionary women who had to throw a couple of elbows to create their own space. Her early band Fritz opened for Jimi Hendrix, and they held their own. She was far ahead of her time, creating her own sound. It was bright, it was fresh, and it was magical. Next, she formed a duo with Fritz's bassist, Lindsey Buckingham, Buckingham Nicks. Then on New Year's Eve 1974, Mick Fleetwood invited Lindsey Buckingham and herself to join Fleetwood Mac, and everybody's lives became brilliant and a lot crazier. Stevie Nicks stepped onto the world stage with unforgettable ease. I remember it well. She began creating stories that flowed from her heart to her pen, which ended up in our souls, with characters that we would always remember. Classic songs like Silver Springs, Rhiannon, Gypsy, and Sarah. In the 1980s, she released Belladonna, the rare first solo album that was as powerful as the supergroup that she was still in. With Stop Dragging My Heart Around, she and Tom Petty took things to another level. Then she did it again with albums with like The Wild Heart, and Rock a Little. Whether on her own, in a duet, with her band, it's probable that at some point she found herself in a barbershop quartet. Stevie could do it all, and that is true Stevie. You can't take your eyes off her, as we've seen tonight. She is the magical gypsy godmother who occupies the in-between. It's a space that can and will only ever be hers. She's a lot like a rock and roll Nina Simone, finding the notes that only she can. And by being so unapologetically herself, she gives others permission to do the same. And that is true Stevie. Yeah. And if you're lucky enough to know her, she's always there for you. She knows what you need. Advice, a little wisdom, a blouse or shawl. She's got you covered. Her songs make you ache, feel on top of the world, make you want to dance, and usually all three at the same time. She is responsible for more running mascara, including my own, than all the bad dates in history combined. And that is true, Stevie. There are few people who hold the stage like her. I was lucky enough to play with her at the Troubadour a few years ago, and all I could do was watch. The show is no longer yours. It is hers, and you take a knee as she takes it from you, and that is true, Stevie. She has many, many solo hits. If Anyone Falls, Edge of 17, Talk to Me. But there are so many gems hidden within the album. Zzz. There are so many gems hidden within the albums. Songs like Belle Fleur and Garbo, Annabelle Lee and Ooh My Love. However you feel or want to feel, there is a Stevie Nicks song that will meet you there. Each song is a dance. It's an emotional ballet. It's a letter to a lover or a friend. And every single year she gathers more momentum. Somewhere around 2005, 2006, this woman became God. I think we can all agree on that. On Halloween, 1 in 7 people dress as Stevie Nicks. She is both an adjective and a verb. To quote my father, that was rather Stevie Nicks. And to quote my mother, I Stevie Nicks that shit so hard. Mick Fleetwood calls her the fearless leader. She is Mama Lion to her friends. She's the family member that you can always count on. I hope she knows what she means to us, what she means to yet another generation of artists who look to her for inspiration and trailblazing courage. That is true, Stevie. She is so much more than a role model. She is a beacon to all of us. Whenever you hear her voice, life gets just a little bit better. When she sings, the world is hers and it is yours. She is everything you have ever wanted in a lady, in a lover, and in a friend. Stephanie Nicks, I love you. We all do. And that is true, Stevie. Ladies and gentlemen, it has been an honor to be with you all here tonight. Thank you so much. Please join me in welcoming to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, for the second time, Stevie Nicks.
After the break, we'll be back with Stevie Nicks' acceptance speech on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Stevie Nicks. Thank you.
What I would like to say is that this speech thing that I'm supposed to give now has been following me down till the sound of its voice will haunt me for the last 2 weeks. It's not hard for me to go and play for you, but it's very hard for me to try to tell you how I thank you for this being the first girl in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice. Sometimes I just can tell great stories because it's like, it's easy. If I'm telling a story about Prince, I can say he picked me up in his purple Camaro and we went out to his purple house in a suburb outside of Minneapolis and nobody knew where I was. And we wrote a song and he called it, It'll Take You Days to Find Her. And I can actually tell you a great story about that because it is what it is. But for me to tell you a story from my heart about what this means to me is very hard because this has never happened to me before. And I'm hoping that since it's never happened to me, and now only once, 22 men in for zero women, and now one woman, that what I am doing is opening up the door. For other women to go like, hey, man, I can do it. And I'm telling all my friends, I like the girls in Haim, I'm going, okay, you guys, you got to really get it together now. And like one of you needs to step away and don't break up your band. Just do an album so you have it because it's going to take 20 years before you will be recognized as again. So you'll already be like 60. So you have to do it right now. So it's like this is the problem of getting in. I was I started Belladonna in 1979. So I'd only been in Fleetwood Mac for not quite 4 years. Really, only like maybe more like 3.5 years. And so this is a hard thing to do because you have to. The times are different, and it's like it's going to be hard. But I know there's somebody out there that will be able to do it because I'm going to give you all the directions, and I'll do enough interviews that say exactly what to do. And I want to tell you that everybody in my life gave me ideas of what I could say to you. Like, this is from, and I have to just say this because I don't have my glasses on, I can't even read it. But I've read it so many times in the middle of the night, crying, going like, I have a shit idea what I'm going to say up there. And this morning at 4:30, my assistant came in, and I'm laying there, and my little Chinese crested is like laying, she lays right on my stomach, and she's looking at me like, it's so late. And I said, and she goes, like, are you done? And I'm going, no, I can't do it. I have to go to bed. I don't know what I'm going to say. I'm just going to have to go out there and go like, you know what? 6 minutes is not very long. So let me move right on. And 6 minutes for me, I majored in speech communication at San Jose State and psychology. 5 years. Five. And the second I called my mom and said, I have to quit because me and Lindsay have to move to L.A. because the music is in San Francisco, but the record deals are in L.A. and we have to go tomorrow. And my mom said, okay, that's fine, but we will be withdrawing all financial support as of this minute. And I said, flat out, I know, Mom. I know, and I'm up to the challenge. 3 waitress jobs, 2 cleaning lady jobs. It was cool. Lindsay worked on the music. I worked on food and dirty houses. And I rather enjoyed it because I could get out of the house and go into the real world instead of just being in the cave with all the guys who were just laying around smoking pot and messing up my house. So it's like I go, excuse me, can I just step over your feet and your pot and everything so I can straighten this place up? And I don't get paid for doing this at my own house, but I will do it for you because I know you guys work hard. So that's a little bit of a moment of how we got before Fleetwood Mac. Okay, so I do want to tell you that this solo album thing, I started thinking about this, and I only know this because my friend Paul Fishkin in 1976, who then became my boyfriend after we went to this convention at the Acapulco Princess, which I like to call the tequila convention, because the first night, everybody had the little necklaces. One of you here may have been there, the little necklaces around your neck, and they come and they fill it with tequila, and who's going to waste tequila? So it's like, so everybody was so drunk that nobody surfaced for 3 solid days, and then it was over. So everybody just went to the airport and left. But not me. I stayed because I'm going like, I'm already down here. Somebody else paid for it, so I'm going to enjoy this vacation. So Paul and me, I said to him, after playing Rumors, which was not even finished, but still really cool, the night before, I didn't ever hear it because I passed out as soon as I pushed play. But some people must have heard it because they spoke about it later. So I said, no, it's new songs. It's other songs. It's, you know, more demos. And he goes like, okay. So we go on the beach and I play him probably 15 or 20 songs. And he goes, wow, that's a lot of songs. Okay. And he's a record man, right? So we go back to LA and New York. We start going out. And I find out because Paul tells me that and a year later when I said to him, do you think there's any way that I can could do a discreet solo album that would not break up Fleetwood Mac. Like, and I'm going like, it's a secret. And he's like, I think so. I think if you're kind and loving and you tell them that you will always put them first and they will always be at the top of your priority list, they will understand and they will say, go do what you want to do and have fun. We'll see you in a year and a half. So that's what we eventually did. And yes, my amazing band is still together and very strong today. So last but not least, which probably won't be last but not least, they can't get me off this stage now that I'm on it. I want to thank, first of all, very quickly, Paul Fishkin, because he was the wise man who said, you can do both and you can have both. You just have to do it with love. That's all. Then I was introduced to his partner, Denny Goldberg, who became Paul's and my, our guru and our calm coach, who kept us calm. I was gone all the time, so they were like talking about this and trying to put it together calmly and serenely. And so I'm off in the world doing Rumors and Tusk, and they're working behind the scenes to see if they can make this happen. And then it happened. We formed a record company called Modern. We went to Mr. Doug Morris at Atlantic, my hero. And I said, so Doug, and this is me. So Doug, what I want to do is I want to make a Tom Petty album, straight up rock and roll. And I have two great girl singers, Lori and Sharon, that are amazing. And we're going to be Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I'm going to be Stills, and they're going to be Nash and Crosby. So we're going to be straight up rock and roll, but we're going to sound like Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And Doug's like, fan-fucking-tastic. I'm sorry, didn't mean to swear. But so then I said, who produces Tom Petty? He goes, Jimmy Iovine. And I'm going like, so can you set me up with Jimmy Iovine? And he goes, yeah, I can. So he says, I'll give him a call. So he calls Jimmy and he sets us up to go and have dinner. So we go and have dinner and I tell him the same thing. Tom Petty, straight up rock album, but we want to sound like Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And he goes like, okay, I can do it. I haven't done a girl album in a while. So we go, okay, good. We both went back to LA because he was there working on finishing Tom's record. So we get there. 10 days later, I moved in with Jimmy. It's just how it was. So I moved in with Jimmy. I learned to make tiny pizzas, and waited for him to finish the album, Tom's album. Meanwhile, me and Lori and Sharon are practicing all our three-part harmonies, which Jimmy and nobody else really wanted to hear. So we were going to be damned if we weren't going to be on that album being Crosby, Stills, and Nash. So we got so good during that next 6 weeks that when he was done and we started Belladonna, we were ready. So we walked in and we made an album in 3 months, which is unheard of, especially in those days. We were focused, we were together, we were organized, and we made a great album. And then Jimmy came to me and said, we have a problem, Stevie. We made a great album, but you don't have a single. And I'm like, seriously? We don't have a single? And you didn't tell me until now? And he goes, well, I thought it would work out. I thought one would come to my head, and it didn't. And so, but I have a plan. Tom Petty says, you can have Stop Dragging My Heart Around. It's already recorded. He'll sing it with you. And problem solved. And I finally got to meet Tom Petty. Who Jimmy had kept me a secret from because he didn't want Tom to get pissed off and think that his attention was going to be taken away because he had a new girlfriend. So I like hid in the basement. It was fine. I got to hear everything and eavesdrop all through it. So anyway, Jimmy, Doug, Paul, Danny, also Irving Azoff, because I had to hire him in 1976 because my mother said, you better get some help here because you don't have anybody taking care of your money. So I hired Irving, who gladly said, sure, I'll do it. Not having any idea that he would still be sitting here tonight going like, sure, I'll do it. My press agent, Liz Rosenberg, who I met in 1976, who is still present press agenting for me, and she's the best. She's the Rona Barrett of today, and I adore her. And she's elegant and incredible, so talk to her if you can. She'll get you in a newspaper. And then there was Howard Kaufman, who passed away a little while ago, who then became my manager when Irving had to go become the president of a record company. And that was okay, because we all have to branch out. And let's see, and Cheryl, who when Howard passed away, then took on the mantle of being my manager, which is no easy thing, because I don't agree with anything anybody says, especially when it's a girl. But thank you, Cheryl, for giving it your all. Anyway, you have been a fantastic, fantastic audience, and I want to tell you, if you ever need a keynote speaker, somebody to talk to, someone to talk to a group of people, I am your girl.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Vault. For more on your favorite inductees, to shop inductee merch, or to plan your trip to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, visit rockhall.com. Plus, view the 2020 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Special on demand on HBO Max. Our executive producers are Noel Brown, Shelby Morrison, and Risa Gerke. Supervising producer is Taylor Chacoin. Research and archival assistants from Isabel Kiefer and Shannon Erb. Thanks again for joining us on this week's episode of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Vault. Induction Vault is a production of iHeartRadio and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.